From Pittsburgh to Gettysburg, Altoona to Bala Cynwyd, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, proposed state constitutional amendments and a seat on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court headline the May primary election ballot. Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting is here with an overview. Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful is working to clean up roadside trash and illegal dumping sites to preserve the natural beauty of our state. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Shannon Ryder of Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And it is time for Pennsylvania's congressional delegation to weigh in to stop President Biden's massive infrastructure plan. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The draconian shutdown orders and restrictions unilaterally imposed by the Wolf administration in response to the COVID-19 pandemic will come to an end on Memorial Day. The only restriction to remain in place is the mask order. The governor has set a 70% vaccination rate as the benchmark for lifting that order. As of now, just over 50% of adults in the Commonwealth have been at least partially vaccinated. Senator Art Haywood, a Philadelphia Democrat who serves on the COVID-19 vaccination task force that was set up earlier this year, pointed to declining hospitalizations and deaths largely attributed to the widespread vaccination. Both Governor Wolf and legislative leaders thanked vaccinated residents for getting us to this point, but continue to encourage those who have not yet been vaccinated to do so. The failure of the Wolf administration to properly advertise a proposed state constitutional amendment that would have opened a window for victims of clergy sexual abuse to take legal action has prompted Republicans in the state House to want to take control over the writing and advertising of such proposed amendments. The Department of State earlier this year admitted to forgetting to properly advertise that amendment, significantly delaying the process. Lawmakers are also upset that wording developed by the department for two proposed amendments to rebalance emergency powers was written deceptively in an effort to stymie their approval. As a result, legislators want to remove that function from the executive branch. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The May 18th primary election is rapidly approaching. Two proposed state constitutional amendments to provide checks and balances over the declaration of emergency powers, statewide judicial races, four special elections for legislative seats, and a wide range of county and municipal offices will be on the ballot. Here to sort through all of this is veteran political consultant Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting. Chris, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Chris, we are doing our pre-election program just a little bit earlier than usual this year because now a lot of people are voting in advance. We have this mail-in voting. I want to just take a couple of seconds and explain to our listeners how this whole mail-in voting process works.
Well, that's a smart move, Loman, to move up your pre-election show because there looks to be about 750,000 folks out there, primarily Democrats, who have requested an absentee ballot, yet you hope, of course, that they actually use it. This mail-in balloting, where we have basically no excuse absentee voting for up to 50 days prior to the election, first came in last year in the presidential race. And as we all know, the presidential race is the biggest, highest profile race. And then we immediately go to the lowest profile set of races in the year ending in one, which is our local county school board and a few state judges races. So yes, there will be more people than in the past odd years voting earlier by the mail-in ballot. Some people also call it absentee ballot. The bulk of the people will still vote at the polls, but we've moved from having election day to really having election fortnight.
And so the balloting has already begun. This, of course, is a primary, so it's not a Republican versus Democrat thing, except in some crossfiled races further down the ballot. But let's talk about what voters statewide are going to be voting on this year, Chris. And you mentioned lower profile races. Maybe a lower profile race, but the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania has become a real flashpoint and a lot of controversy stemming back to their redrawing of congressional district lines, their rulings and all the shutdown orders. There's been a lot of attention placed on the Supreme Court. So is that really as low profile as usual or?
Well, I think it's still low profile, but getting a little bit higher profile. So this year we have four judgeships that are open, one on the Supreme Court, two on the Commonwealth Court, and one on the Superior Court. So let's focus a bit on the Supreme Court. A couple years ago, the voters via referendum changed the retirement age, mandatory retirement age, for state judges to 75. And this year, Tom Saylor, one of the two Republicans on the court, reaches 75, and the law says you can serve to the end of the year you turn 75. So we now, in essence, have an open seat on the court because he can't serve any longer. So the Republicans have three candidates running, so they actually have a primary. The Democrats just have one. So in this race, at least, the Democratic nominee is a foregone conclusion. The Republicans, like I said, have a primary. And these judges, Lowman, as we've talked about before, they serve 10-year terms, the longest term of any but one elected in Pennsylvania. So these people, think about it, they will run in 2021, get inaugurated in 2022, and then serve until 2032. So all your listeners, think about where you're going to be in 11 years or how old you're going to be in 11 years. These people will still be, God willing, of course, knock on wood, serving their term. So it's really important. You get a bite at the apple on these judges, but only once every 10 years.
And then they run for retention, yes or no, not reelection. So,
correct.
And given the age of at least some of the candidates running on the Republican side could potentially be there for 15, 20 years. Republicans, of course, have endorsed Kevin Brobson, who is now the president judge of the Commonwealth Court from Dauphin County. But this is a case where the endorsement's not necessarily a slam dunk because you have at least one other candidate who is very popular, especially among some of the conservative grassroots.
I think all in all that while you can debate the value of the endorsement by the Republican Party of Pennsylvania, as someone who runs elections for a living, all things being equal, I'd rather have that endorsement than not have it.
Yep.
There's always a certain group in each party that kind of automatically rebels against whoever the endorsed candidate is. But I think in this case, I'd rather be Kevin Brobson's campaign than Patricia McCullough's or Paula Patrick's campaign. So, but again, the other candidates, one's from Philadelphia on the Republican side and one is from Pittsburgh, Allegheny County. And Judge Brobson, as you said, who's the president judge of the Commonwealth Court, he's from Dauphin County. So Dauphin County is not small, but it's smaller than Philadelphia and Allegheny. Yeah. So that always comes into play too. And then the other thing is, again, just who turns out. I think our turnout this year will be a little juiced by the issue we're about to talk about.
And we are going to talk about constitutional amendments that are going to be on the ballot. We are talking with Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting. These ballot issues usually are people pay virtually no attention to them. They're very low profile. This year, however, the tables are completely turned. We have two constitutional amendments dealing with governor's executive powers. Tell us a bit about those proposed constitutional amendments.
So I always tell my friends, especially outside Pennsylvania, that we are the anti-Colorado, the anti-California of ballot initiatives. Those states have six or seven every year. We go years without having any, and now we have four. Two of them are very very kind of just normal things that no one's going to worry about. But the first two that would restrict a governor, not necessarily this governor, but a governor, any governor's ability to unilaterally call, put the state into crisis mode, and then be able to renew it without anyone else having any other say, essentially going from three co-equal branches of government to just one branch. Those are what the first two amendments are. So if you want to allow Governor Wolf to continue to have this unilateral power, you would vote no. The questions are worded very poorly, which was, we think, done on purpose. If you want to restrict a governor's ability to constantly put us into crisis mode, you would vote yes. So the thing to remember is this is not a phenomenon unique to Pennsylvania. According to articles I've read and studies I've seen, there are efforts underway in more than 40 states to restrict a governor's ability to do these type of unilateral decisions to shut down schools and shut down restaurants and shut down businesses. Again, this is not something unique to Pennsylvania. It's not something unique to a state that has a Republican legislature that feels like it's been pushed out and a Democratic governor. This is happening everywhere because another fallout of this terrible COVID-19 pandemic.
And we should hasten to point out that this does not just restrict Tom Wolf. It restricts future governors who may be Republican or Democrat. And in fact, Chris, this may not have a whole lot of impact on Tom Wolf because at least hopefully we're starting to emerge from this pandemic and loosen up anyhow. So
it really forces two co-equal branches of government who run government day to day, the executive, the governor, and the legislature, meaning the state house and the state senate, to have to work together. Our vaccine rollout program was in shambles, and then they rightly figured out, hey, we should have a joint task force between the Republican legislature and the Democratic governor's office. And all of a sudden, it started making much better strides and taking us from at the bottom of vaccination rates to at least somewhere in the middle where we are now, which isn't perfect, but it's better to be the 17th best state doing this rather than the 44th best state doing this.
So basically, if you want to restore balance between the legislature and the governor, you vote yes. If you want to let the governor have unilateral power, you vote no.
Yep. And there's two different amendments. And most of the Democrats are saying vote no and no on those two and vote yes on the two non-controversial ones. And Republicans are saying vote yes on all four.
Also on the ballot and not statewide, we have – and it's sort of an unusual number because of – a combination of circumstances, most of them not good. We have two special elections for seats in the state Senate and two special elections for seats in the state House of Representatives that are going to be on the ballot here on May 18th. You want to tell us a little bit about those four races?
Sure. And before I do that, I want to make a note that in these special elections, even if you're a registered independent, you don't normally vote in primaries, but because these are special elections, you can vote. And the same thing for the ballot initiatives. I should have mentioned that. I will now. If you're a registered independent, you don't normally vote in primaries, but you can go by mail-in ballot or show up on election day in the primary, and they'll give you a special ballot that only is for those four ballot questions, and you can vote. So if you're a registered independent, nonpartisan, libertarian, socialist, worker party, whatever it is, you normally don't vote in the spring. This year, you can vote in the spring. So we had two health-related vacancies in Western PA in the state house. One state representative, Mike Reese, unfortunately passed away. Another one, Jeff Pyle, is facing some serious health issues, and he resigned. So those seats are in Indiana and Armstrong County, and then Westmoreland and Somerset counties. So again, both are Republican seats. Both should stay that way. But again, even if you're registered independent out there, you can vote. And then here in central Pennsylvania, in the 48th district, we had another death of our state senator, Dave Arnold, who happens to be my state senate seat, passed away after a courageous battle with brain cancer. And then you had a state senator in Northeast PA resigned to take a job with the local congressman up there. So again, you've got the one seat around here in Harrisburg, which is mostly Lebanon County, along with parts of Dauphin and York, and the other one up in NEPA, as we call it, Northeast PA, NEPA, NEPA, is in Lackawanna County. Three of these seats are Republican, one is Democrat. I think most people would say those seats are going to stay that way. There is an outside chance that the state Senate seat up in Lackawanna County could flip because that part of the world is becoming more Republican as the parties kind of shift and change who their coalition members are. So again, those are those four races. And then the other thing I would say finally, Loman, is that we all have local races for township supervisor, borough council, mayor, in some of the county offices, some like controller, and in some cases district attorney. So these seats may not get a lot of attention, but they impact you even more so than federal races do, because they're your local neighbors making decisions for your township or your county.
Very much so. We have been talking with veteran political consultant Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting. Chris, where can folks go if they'd like to contact you or learn more about what you do?
Thank you, Lowen. Our website is eagleconsult.com. That's eagleconsult.com. And if you're on Twitter, you can follow me at the hashtag @Eagle63.
Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting. Chris, thank you for being back with us.
Thanks, Lowen.
Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful is working to clean up litter and illegal dump sites along Pennsylvania roadways and parks. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Shannon Ryder, president of Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful, in this Community Benefit Spotlight.
Thank you, Lowen, and thank you, Shannon, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program.
Thank you so much for having me this morning, Joe.
Shannon, share with the listeners, if you will, what the inspiration was to start an organization in the name of Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful.
Our history goes back to the early 90s. And there was a woman in Hemphill Township, Westmoreland County, named Sue Wiseman. And she would travel the back roads riding her horses. And she would stumble across illegal dumping, construction, demolition waste, household trash. And she really wanted to clean it up. And what she found is that there were some barriers to getting that assistance, to getting those materials cleaned up, because she couldn't do it alone. And what she did is she contacted her township, she contacted some county officials, and she started doing cleanups. And she found folks to help her haul the trash to the state highways, and PennDOT then went ahead and helped clean up that trash. And really what happened is one person who wanted to make a difference in her community figured out how. And that organization that she started was actually called PA Cleanways. And when folks figured out that there was people like Sue, they realized there's probably other people in Westmoreland County that want to clean up these back roads. But there was no way to do it, because state-maintained roads had that support through the Adopt-a-Highway program, but these more rural areas didn't. And that's where Sue made the difference.
I've traveled to Israel. I've traveled to Japan. Last week, I traveled down through Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina. And Pennsylvania is just such a beautiful state in comparison. But the areas I just mentioned, you don't see a lot of trash typically along the roads. But in Pennsylvania, it seems like there's more of it. What are the guiding principles for your organization? How do you get your mission fulfilled?
How do we deliver our mission? We truly believe education's extremely important. So we talk about the importance of not just education in our schools, but education for consumers. We believe that it's really important to promote individual responsibility, but also corporate responsibility. It is a shared responsibility for keeping our communities clean. It's not up to one or the other, it's shared. Public-private partnerships are absolutely critical.
How do you deal with the volume of what needs to be done?
PA Cleanways and Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful merged back in 2009. And so now we are Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful. We're the state affiliate of Keep America Beautiful, and we have over 30 local affiliates across the state, but we have hundreds of partners. We have boots on the ground in every county, and they're doing everything from streamside cleanups, roadside cleanups, to special collections for things like tires, electronics. They're doing tree plantings. Really, we're a community improvement organization, not just cleanups.
Do we have an understanding of why people dump their trash? Why don't they just go home and put it in the can?
I don't know where you live, but I know I live in a suburban community where a waste hauler comes on Wednesday morning and they take my trash and my recycling, and I don't have to think about it. And I can pretty much put anything out at the curb. And frankly, that's how I grew up. So it wasn't until I started working at PA Cleanways in 2004 that I understood that not everybody has what is called curbside access.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio program. My guest today is Shannon Ryder, president of Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful. Shannon, how do we compare with other states? Do you have any metrics that addresses, is it worse here or better than other places?
What I can definitely say is that because of Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful's commitment to this issue, we have a lot of data on illegal dumping and littering. We probably have more data on these issues than other states. And so while I can say through our research we have identified over 6,000 illegal dump sites in Pennsylvania and that we have documented over 500 million pieces of litter on Pennsylvania roadways, other states don't have that data.
You need volunteers to do the work of your organization. Is it difficult to recruit volunteers, and what kind of loyalty do you have in your volunteers once they get started?
We have amazing volunteers all across the state.
You talked about education as one of the guiding principles to fulfill your mission. How do you deliver the education, and where can people find it?
We have a host of educational tools on our website, keeppabeautiful.org, under Prevent It and Keep It. So that's kind of how our programs are organized. But we have a host of educational tools called Open Your Eyes to Litter, which are specific to school-age groups. We also have fact sheets and things on litter and illegal dumping when we're talking about policy, public officials, so we have resources for them as well. We also have education. We have specific curriculum for schools, and we also have a host of enforcement education tools. So to train local enforcement on some of these issues, as well as how to work with enforcement agencies. What are the laws, the different statutes, and things like that.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Shannon Ryder, president of Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful. Shannon, thank you for being a guest on the program.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Back to you, Loman.
If you are part of or know of a nonprofit organization in Pennsylvania that you would like us to spotlight on Lincoln Radio Journal, please email us at lincolnradiojournal@gmail.com. President Biden is proposing $6 trillion in new federal government spending, including a massive infrastructure plan that expends little on actual infrastructure. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
On March 31st, the White House released the fact sheet for President Biden's American Jobs Plan, and not a month later, the fact sheet for his American Families Plan was released. Together, these proposals total upward of $4 trillion. Earlier in the month of March, the president signed the American Rescue Plan Act, hereafter ARPA, totaling $1.9 trillion. But unlike the COVID spending bills of 2020, ARPA did not receive a single vote from Republicans. With Washington spending transforming from talking billions to talking trillions, it seems some members are awakening to two realities. First, that these costly bills will come due, and second, that massive tax increases will be required to pay the notes. As Congress contemplates what will be appropriated for these plans, it's important to recognize past mistakes and course correct before it's too late. Americans have already funded spending bills disguised as infrastructure and had embarrassing returns on our investment. Who can forget President George W. Bush's 2005 bill that included funding for the infamous Bridge to Nowhere? Think back to 1998 when President Clinton signed a $217 billion transportation bill, or 2009 when President Obama signed the $831 billion American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. Were we not told then that these were the solutions for our infrastructure needs? Well, history proves that Washington regularly defends big price tags for big infrastructure bills as being necessary, but instead only prove wasteful. Now, President Biden wants us to foot a $4 trillion package that spends more money subsidizing electric cars than roads, highways, and airports combined. Pennsylvania, we know the wasteful and embarrassing results we get for so-called infrastructure spending, and it is now time we ensure our congressional delegation of 20 members understands what we expect, and that is for them to reject these tired ideas. Specifically, Congress should not increase taxes. The Biden proposal calls for raising over $2 trillion in new taxes to be collected over the next 15 years. Collectively, these changes would give the U.S. the highest overall corporate tax burden of the 37 member countries of the OECD. These tax increases would hurt workers' wages, they would crush small businesses, and altogether not even come close to paying for the massive spending bill. Congress shouldn't further restrict the labor market. The Biden proposal seeks to implement elements of the PRO Act, which would make unprecedented, harmful changes to federal labor laws, banning states' right-to-work laws that protect workers from being fired if they choose not to join and pay a union, restrict worker ability to earn a living as an independent contractor, and implement costly and unnecessary financial penalties that would bankrupt small businesses. Congress should not enact Green New Deal-style policies that will increase energy poverty. The Biden plan includes nearly $1 trillion for clean energy projects, much of it resembling the legislation that constitutes the Green New Deal. Congress shouldn't provide handouts to the politically connected. The Biden plan includes over $700 billion in taxpayer-financed handouts to special interests and government-preferred industries, including everything from electric vehicles to broadband, unaffordable and unreliable energy, monopoly electric utilities, and top-down health care. These reductions in investments constrain choice and replace consumer preferences with politically preferred technology and fuels, hurting the most vulnerable citizens. And last, Congress shouldn't use an infrastructure bill to pursue expensive and unrelated priorities. Only 6% of spending in this Biden plan is dedicated to roads and bridges, with the rest of it being dubiously defined as infrastructure. In our next commentary, we'll discuss alternative solutions and what Congress should do. But right now, it is up to us to stand for future generations who don't currently have the opportunity to scale their voice, but whose ability to pursue their American dream will be unnecessarily burdened by our lawmakers' decisions of today to spend trillions. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania. You can find us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania.
The 2021 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is now just a few weeks away. After being virtual last year, an in-person conference will be held June 11 and 12 at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, of course, is the premier gathering of conservative activists each year here in the Keystone State. This year's featured speakers will be Jesse Waters, host of Waters World on the Fox News Channel, and Fox News contributor Jason Chaffetz, along with John Gizzi of Newsmax. Complete information and registration for the 2021 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference can be found at paleadershipconference.org. And if you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, lincolnradiojournal.com and lincolninstitute.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.